Hey, Gil, would you pay to see an iPhone in a museum?
Yes, any day. Oh my God! I would pay all my money to see it. Oy. Oh my God.
You would pay money to see an iPhone in a museum?
Yeah.
I should mention my son Gil really, really wants an iPhone, so maybe that was a bad example. How about a dishwasher?
No, because that means I would probably have to unload it.
I do make you unload the dishwasher. Okay, how about a car?
Depends what kind of car.
Toyota Camry.
I don't know. That's awfully specific. And that's boring. I can see a Toyota Camry literally if I just walk down the street.
Well, do you think people would pay to see those things in 100 years?
Yeah, they'd be a lot more interesting to them than to us.
Well, what if I told you there was a museum right outside Philadelphia where you can see everyday objects from more than a century ago?
We can't go to museums right now because of the pandemic, right?
We can virtually.
Oh, right.
That's right, Gil. It's time for another installment of Why Didn't I Go There? In which my son Gil and I do a virtual tour of a cool place we didn't get to before the pandemic hit.
Being such a dad right now.
Ready, Gil? I'm Shai Ben-Yakov.
And I'm Gil Patrick Ben-Yakov.
This is the Why. Okay, time for a confession. I've actually been to the Mercer Museum in Doylestown, Bucks County, but it's such a unique and amazing place that I had to include it. Built by Henry Mercer, the museum is a time capsule of late 19th century tools, vehicles, and medical devices, and other objects of the time. And what I find so cool about it is that Mercer had the foresight to collect these things as they were still being used. Our tour guide for our virtual visit is Corey Amsler, Vice President of Collections and Interpretations at the Mercer Museum and Font Hill Castle. So, Corey, before I get started, I want to introduce you to my son, Gil. Gil, say hi.
Hi.
Hello there.
I want to just kind of ask a little bit about the history of the museum. And Henry Mercer is kind of the man at the center of this, right?
Right, yeah. So Mercer grew up locally in a fairly well-to-do family. He ended up in a position with the University of Pennsylvania Museum as an archaeologist. And the story goes that one day in 1897, he was going to a local junk dealer, and he had this sort of epiphany. Because he witnessed all of these artifacts that were being discarded, all of these tools and objects of everyday life that were being discarded in favor of new industrial machinery. And to his archaeologist's eye, he recognized these were the things that future archaeologists were going to be looking for to document early American civilization. And he began a collecting binge. When Mercer started collecting in 1897, he wanted to find out what the object meant to somebody who may have used it in the past.
And do you think that the public embraced that vision? I mean, here he is putting on display really tools that were, you know, used by everyday people in the community. Did people sort of go to the museum and say, why am I going to a museum to see these things? I can see them anywhere.
It's sometimes hard to tell exactly what the community may have thought of Mercer because, you know, this was an era when there was a fair amount of deference to rich individuals in the community. Now, the difficulty came in with Mercer really wanting to develop a museum that would appeal not just to the public, but also to academics, to scholars. So I think, you know, Mercer at the end of his life kind of felt that he was a little bit of a failure. He hadn't, you know, managed to reorient the study of American history around objects rather than the written word.
So there's the Mercer Museum and there's also Font Hill Castle, right?
Right.
These are quite impressive buildings. Can you describe them to us? Let's just start with Font Hill. What does that building look like?
Fot Hill has a rough finished exterior. The house is completely embellished on the interior with tiles. So it's an extremely colorful, extremely decorated interior. And then in addition to the tile works, there are prints and artwork of other kinds that decorate pretty much every room in the house.
I should mention that we're looking at some images that Kelsey sent over of the interior. Yeah, really, really colorful sort of mosaic tiles. Gil, did you want to add something to that?
I see a lot, like more than normal, a lot of windows.
There are a lot of windows. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Mercer originally didn't have a whole lot of electric lighting inside the house. He was mostly relying on natural light to light his interior, or oil lamps or things like that. So he liked windows, and he installed a lot of them around all sides of his house. And Fot Hill is interesting because he actually encased an older building, a farmhouse, inside his concrete castle. So it's a building within a building.
Why did he do that?
For preservation purposes. He didn't like to destroy any sort of historical properties, historical buildings of any kind. He decided to save it and essentially encase it in concrete and make it fireproof.
That's incredible. How was a building like this constructed?
Both buildings, Fot Hill and the Mercer Museum, were constructed by pretty much the same crew of about 8 laborers and a horse named Lucy, who provided power to hoist the concrete, hoist the building materials. There were no floor plans, no blueprints, you know, like we would think of today.
No blueprints.
It was a little bit like, I don't know if you ever did this, but when I was a kid, I would draw my dream house and all the different rooms and what the rooms would be and things like that.
Of course, and you just kind of build it as you go. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Mercer made sure that Lucy was compensated with the same salary as the human employees.
Did he pay her in oats or carrots? No, just money.
I assume that the money that he paid, obviously to Lucy's owner, was translated into oats of some kind. Yeah.
It's really amazing that they actually gave a horse a salary.
Yeah.
So incredible.
Pretty
like,
great.
What?
And what about the Mercer Museum? Can you walk us through that building and describe what you'd see walking through it?
Today's Mercer Museum is about an 8-story concrete castle. That is the core of it. When you walk in there, you're going to be able to look up about 5 floors in this sort of giant atrium and see hanging above you large artifacts like fire engines, a Conestoga wagon, a whaleboat, other vehicles. And then you're surrounded on all sides with rooms that house tools and objects from pre-industrial America. It's kind of a giant filing cabinet, in a sense.
A giant filing cabinet does seem to feel accurate for this. Tell me about the boats and the vehicles, that because that is very striking. They're sort of hanging over your head as you walk in. What are they all about?
You know, Mercer kind of had to convince potential visitors that these things were worth being preserved. One of the ways he did that was by forcing people to look at them in ways that they were not accustomed to. So, you know, getting a whale's eye view of a whaleboat or seeing baskets and cradles hanging from the ceiling was not the context that most people were used to seeing these obsolete artifacts in Mercer's time. So it was a little jarring, and it was intended to be so.
We'll be right back.
So
supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with my son Gil, talking with Corey Amsler, Vice President of Collections and Interpretations at the Mercer Museum and Fonthill Castle in Doylestown, Bucks County. I mean, this idea of kind of having that foresight to see the tools that were used in his time and say, these are artifacts that are worth preserving. You see all of these displays, and the displays have all the tools of a given artisan, right? Like some like a craftsman of that day, right?
Right. As you make your way up through the museum, what you see in the smaller rooms and alcoves are the tools of the blacksmith, the tools of the tinsmith, the tools of the pewterer. And again, I say tools, but Mercer defined tool as pretty broadly. So, you know, in terms of things that are in the museum, certainly a hammer, a saw, we think of those as tools. But furniture, decorated chests, cradles were all, in Mercer's view, tools because they met a particular need or want. And as you continue to work your way up and you get closer to the top, you'll encounter a gallows, a hearse, stoves and stove plates. As somebody has said, everything that it took to make America, everything literally it took to make America, is on display.
Did Henry Mercer intend for it to become a museum, or did he live in it and it just became a museum later on?
When a lot of people come in to visit the Mercer Museum, that's one of the first questions they ask. But in fact, Mercer planned the building to be a museum. You know, he built it for the collection. The collection wasn't made for it.
Are there any objects in the Mercer that kind of jump out at you? What are some of your favorite items, and what are the stories they tell?
I'm struck particularly by the kinds of objects that maybe no one else other than Henry Mercer would have thought to preserve. An example of that is something called a Calathumpian rattle. This is an object that was made up from lots of pieces of little machines and tools of one kind or another. And what it is, it's a giant noisemaker. Mercer, in collecting that object, didn't just collect the object itself, but he was collecting the stories behind it. So he knew when he acquired this giant noisemaker that made an incredible racket, that what he was collecting was an object connected to a particular folk practice, which was the shivaree or the Calathumpian orchestra. When a couple got married, neighbors might gather together and so-called serenade the newlyweds by making a huge racket outside their bedroom window. And this particular noisemaker was used on a farm not far from Doylestown around 1850. If you didn't know what the history was, you wouldn't even know what its function was, that Henry Mercer collected.
Yeah, so an object that really kind of tells a story. I don't remember seeing this there, but I understand there's something called a vampire kit at the museum. Can you describe that and tell me what it was for?
Sure. So I've been at the museum for about 32 years. I came in 1988, and in that year, a donor gave to us what was purported to be a vampire-killing kit. It was an object that had things in it like a pistol that shot allegedly silver bullets. It had an ivory-faced crucifix that doubled
as a wooden stake. Aren't the silver bullets for werewolves, though?
There's some confusion in terms of the folklore in this object. Yeah, absolutely. It was a very mysterious object. We certainly had some suspicions about it. And in subsequent years, many others of these so-called vampire kits have surfaced. They're largely thought now to be made up from older objects, but recontextualized. Now, I mean, we sort of use it, recognizing it's not truly a vampire killing kit. as a way to gain some insight into folk beliefs and folklore about vampirism. So although it's a made up object, it still can serve a purpose in terms of providing a place to sort of talk about this particular form of folklore.
Does the collection, like, do you think that, like, any of the items we use every day here, like, say, a phone charger, I don't know, I'm coming up with something random. Do you think, like, at some point people in the future will, like, see and be like, what is this? Would that be worth, like, preserving for future museums like Mercer did, like Henry Mercer did?
Yeah, I think it's probably not something we're going to try to preserve, but some museum is around the country is going to be collecting those things. You know, when I was growing up, the telephones we didn't have push button telephones. We had what were called rotary dial telephones. Well, nobody sees rotary dial telephones anymore. That's an object that is passed away, but somebody is collecting that kind of technology, that kind of tool.
You know, when people like us come to the museum, what do you hope that we come away with? You know, it seems like Henry Mercer had a real philosophy here. Is it your hope that people kind of walk away with a bit of that philosophy as well?
I think there's a couple of things that we kind of hope people will take away. One is just a sense of wonder and inspiration. I mean, every object in this museum is a solution to a problem. And, you know, we still have no shortage of problems, you know, as human beings. And some of those can't be solved by tools, but a lot of things can. And that's why we continue to invent, we continue to innovate. And a lot of those inventions and inspiration come from just being inspired. You know, we're all surrounded by stuff. And, you know, all of that's the reason we have all of that stuff in a lot of cases is because the stuff means something to us. And, you know, we'd love people to come, you know, come away from the museum and think about the stuff that's in their own lives and what that stuff does mean to them and what stories lie behind it. It's delving in and thinking about the meanings of all of the things that we surround ourselves with.
Well, I don't know about you, but I know what I want to walk away from the museum with next time I go.
What's that, Gil?
Yeah?
A souvenir.
A souvenir? Yes, well, we have those as well.
Corey, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. It's been so fascinating, and we can't wait to go back to the Mercer.
Well, thank you so much. Again, I appreciate the opportunity. We do hope you'll be back real soon.
Corey Amsler is Vice President of Collections and Interpretations at the Mercer Museum and Fonthill Castle. The Mercer Museum is set to reopen to the general public on July 23rd. Fonthill Castle will reopen August 3rd. Gil, you want to take this one?
The Why is produced by Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen with the editorial direction from Katie Culinary. I'm Gil Patrick Ben-Yakov.
And I'm Shai Ben-Yakov. Stay safe, and we'll see you tomorrow.